It's hard to believe we are at the last message, the last time. It seemed like these meetings were a ways off a long time ago, and here they are almost over. And it's a reminder of what it's going to be like. I guess someday the trumpet will sound and it will be over. And trust that if we don't meet here again, on this side of eternity, we can meet on the other side. Thank you all for all you've done for me, and let me stay in your home, drive your vehicles, and whatever else you've done. Fed me well. I certainly didn't lack for food, that's for sure. And did appreciate the Christian fellowship and what I see here, and your desire to serve the Lord. Just want to bless you in that, and keep serving the Lord faithfully. Someday it will be worth it all. Hey, people prepared in these times. I guess there's a number of ways to preach this message, but I'm going to, it's geared toward the younger among us. And I don't know if you like that thought or if you don't. And I will explain to you a little later in the message why I'm doing that. I have here some roses. This rose right here, you give it another day. Maybe 2 days, it will be fully opened and hopefully very beautiful. But you know, our life can sometimes be like this rose. Here's a rose that's full of lots of potential. And if it was still connected to the vine, it would someday continue to be that beautiful. It would be that beautiful rose. And your life is like that, young girls, young boys. You know, sometimes in life we become dissatisfied with how God is opening the rose of our life. You know, and we start to say, you know what? Time for me to make some things happen on my own. I don't want to be single all my life. And, you know, maybe they get involved in a bad relationship. Or maybe they get involved in pornography. Or maybe they are texting someone of the opposite gender and they go too far. And they continue, they take that rose of their life and they force it open. And after a while, here's what you have. And I just want to ask you a question. Who was supposed to open that rose? God was, right? God was supposed to open that rose. Do you want me behind the mic? It's a tremendous challenge for all of us, and probably especially young people, as you look at your life and you wonder what God has for you. Does God have any plans for my life? If He does, what are they? Sometimes waiting on God is some of the hardest things in life to do. But I want you to remember the illustration of what happens whenever we try to make our life, we force the rose of our life open. Outside of God's plan, God's purpose. You gave that rose some time and God would have opened it up. There's another way that I think we destroy some roses in our life. You know, and I have watched and seen people, young married couples. And they say, you know what? I'm just tired of people telling me what to do. I'm just sick and tired of church standards, all these regulations we have around here. I don't understand what's the big deal of why we got to wear a cape dress. Why isn't a skirt and blouse okay? And they get married and say, you know what? We ain't going to have kids for a while. I want to just live life. And they keep acting like this through life. And they keep running their own ship.
their own way. And after a while, you see that person 10, 15, 20 years later. And the beauty and the potential that was there is gone. Gone. Because I wanted to live life my own way. One of the things, youth and young couples, that you're wrestling with, whether you know it or not, is you're wrestling with this whole thought, am I going to own the things that I've been taught all my life and what has been promoted in my church? Am I going to own that for my own or am I not? Yeah, you can be raised in a Christian home, you can be taught in a Christian home, but there comes a point in life where we need to decide, is this going to be what I am going to own for my own? You understand what I'm saying? There comes a point where you have to decide, is this going to be what I really want? I'm not talking about we put on a facade. We just come to church. We look right. No. Am I going to own it? Am I going to own it so that I teach my children? I believe it with all my heart. And it's good for young people to wrestle through that. We need to get to the point in life where we decide what we are going to own and what we're going to live out and believe. And I want to preach this message to the younger because we set our course in our youth. If we're going to be people prepared in these times, I guess we need the wisdom of the older ones. We need the older ones. We need the parents and all of that. But to me, it's so critical that we set our course in our youth. And I'm not real old, but I'm old enough to have watched my friends. And the ones who were listening to country music, the ones who were listening to rock music, the ones who were living a double life when I was young, I can only think of a couple of them who turned around and they turned around in their youth. I can only think of a couple of them who are in the church today. Most of them who lived that double life, who decided, who were always sneaking around, are not where any of us would want to be today. And I use that as an illustration to help us. We set our course in our youth. And think about it yourself. How often do you hear of 40-year-olds making a turnaround? I'm not saying it can't happen. That's not my point. My point is, as youth, you set your course. And if you somehow have in your mind that I'm going to change tomorrow sometime, you're kidding yourself. We're in a warfare, and the stakes are high. Jesus said it would be this way. He said, from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force. And this is a picture of the kingdom of God, and the way what it's going to take to be a Christian today is I look at this lifestyle, I look at this way of life. No, it's more than that. I look at the way to live that Jesus teaches. And when I decide I'm going to own this, I'm going to have this for my own, that you're going to literally have to grab a hold of this thing and take it by force. You cannot just automatically live a Christian life. The law and the prophets were until John. Since that time the kingdom of God is preached, and every man presseth into it. Every man presses into it. In Luke chapter 1, it talks about John the Baptist coming. And it is there that it talks about preparing a people for the coming of the Lord. And we're not preparing people for the first coming, but we are preparing them for the second. Luke chapter 1, talking about John the Baptist here. And he shall go before him in the spirit and power of Elias to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. And if we're going to be a people prepared in these times, we're going to have to be men and women of conviction that believe what the Word of God says, that know what we believe. Men and women of conviction. I'm going to use that word fairly often here. But number one, point number one, personal conviction starts with understanding truth. I know I've used that word an awful lot here in this week, but truth is so powerful. Truth is so powerful. Personal conviction starts understanding truth. Letter A, let's define this word conviction. You probably heard the explanation that to have a conviction, you must be willing to die for it. I guess I'd like to say that's probably a little too strong. That's how I personally feel, just because we're not faced with that today. If I decide I'm going to live life for the Lord Jesus Christ, at this point your life isn't at stake in America. And so for one thing, we struggle to wrap our minds around that concept. But what is conviction? This is just my definition, and so you can do with it what you want. But the belief that to start or continue an action would start to bring a separation between me and God. See, there's a lot of things in this life that are not exactly wrong. There's a lot of things like that. That you can't look at it and say, sin. But there are a lot of things that I can look at and say, you know, as I evaluate that, if I continue to do this and I continue to walk down this path, I'm afraid of where that will take me in 10 years. And so I develop personal conviction that because 10 years from now I don't want to be here, today I'm going to live like this. Do you know the U.S. Supreme Court has established a definition for conviction? I don't even know where I got this article at. But it took an Amish man named Jonas Yoder in the public school system of the state of Wisconsin. Yoder refused to send his children to public school. The state of Wisconsin tried all manner of things to convince Jonas Yoder to send his children to public school. They threatened him with jail. They threatened of jailing his wife. They threatened to take his children. But nothing would move him to comply to send his children to public school. Finally, they sued him. State of Wisconsin sued him. Yoder lost in Wisconsin. The decision was appealed to the federal Supreme Court. The federal court ruled in favor of Jonas Yoder and set forth a precedent for subsequent cases. In doing this, they established a definition for conviction. Guess what the court said? The court separated preference from conviction. You may hold to a preference very strongly. You may go out and evangelize based on preference. You can donate your wealth to a preference. You can hold it so dear that you would teach it to your children. You may even decide to give your life for a preference. That's what the court said. But a preference is a belief that will change with the circumstances. And they gave four things. They said if peer pressure, family pressure, legal action taken against us, or imprisonment would cause me to back down or to change our belief, that they would say it is not a conviction, but rather a strongly held preference. And so the court simply says a couple of things. That a conviction is a belief you will not change. In essence, it was saying a conviction is a belief founded upon the understanding that this is something that God requires of you. To betray this conviction would put you in the place of betraying your God. I'd say they did a pretty good job. Letter B, to have conviction, You must have a foundation or be able to go back to a foundation in time of doubt. And I don't know if you've ever done this or not, but I have. Where we talking about this thing and you say, well, I have conviction for this. And you know, when we stand up and we say and we believe we have conviction for something, God will someday put us to the test. Do you really believe this or don't you? And you know, and sometimes when God puts you to the test, you flounder. Because why? You struggle to find a foundation for what you said you believe. And so if we're going to be men and women of conviction, we must be able to take our belief and what we say we have conviction for to take it back to a foundation. Because our belief and what we say we believe will be tried in some way. Not by persecution or by fire, but somebody, somewhere, some situation is going to try us. Do I believe it or don't I? And our ability to take what we believe is true and right, and what we say we have convictions for, and to be able to take that back to a foundation of truth is very essential. We must be able to take our convictions back to a foundation. The ability to do that is going to determine whether we're going to keep it or not keep it in the day of testing. Letter C, to have conviction, our foundation must be truth. And we've talked about truth a lot. I won't spend a lot of time on it. But let's think about this, that sometimes we get this idea and we say, well, you know, this is something I have, and then we try to find Bible or truth to support it. You know, that's the wrong way to approach it. Convictions need to come, they need to be a response to the knowledge of the truth. That's much different than pulling out my opinion and trying to find Bible to back it up. Conviction needs to be a response to the knowledge of the truth. And if a person's life is lacking in conviction, it's because of a lack of truth. It's either I don't know truth, or I'm not willing to apply truth in my life. Now, I'd like to use three examples of men who were faithful in their day, and they were a prepared men. I'd like to turn to Genesis chapter 39. These are very familiar verses to us, familiar stories, but so powerful. Genesis 39, verse 7. And it came to pass, after these things, that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass that she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her, to lie by her, or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went out into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. Turn with me to Daniel chapter 1. Brother Pete referred to this story here, I think it was last evening, so I'm just going to read one verse. Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Daniel chapter 3, verses 13 through 24. 13. I'm sorry, I was wrong chapter. Daniel 3, verse 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up. Now if ye be ready that at the time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music. Ye fall down and worship the golden image which I have made. Well, but if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hand? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. Here's the phrase I want us to really get. But if not, we know the story. They didn't. They didn't know the outcome. Another thing that's impressed upon me is this was, if we go back to the beginning of the chapter, this was all the big shots, if you want to call it that. That's who was gathered together here. And King Nebuchadnezzar was not a man to stand up to say, I'm not going to listen to you. In his rage and fury, they were standing before a man who was furious. And he got so mad that his face was changed. And this was it. They said, but if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Were they men of conviction? Did they know what they believed? I think so. Let's just get these stories in perspective a little bit. The way I understand in the book of Genesis that Joseph was a man in his 20s. A young man in his 20s, faced with that kind of temptation. Boys, men, whatever you are. We have to know that that temptation was real. We have to. We have to agree that that temptation was real. But he did not give himself any room. He said it says he refused to be with her. And in Daniel to me is almost more outstanding. When you study into it, the way I understand it, Daniel was 14 or 15 years old when he stood and said, I will not eat the king's meat or drink his wine. 14 years old. Does that put that story in a little different perspective? What a man of conviction. Number two, we need personal conviction to withstand temptation. Thinking about letter A, talking about Joseph. He understood this woman belonged to someone else. He told her, he said, Thou art his wife. Yes, that's what he told her. Thou art his wife. He knew who she belonged to. He put her in her place. You belong to him. You know, that's so important in this whole area of moral purity. Young men, every girl, every woman belongs to somebody. Most young ladies belong to their parents, belong to their dad and mom. If they're married, they belong to their husband. And if they're older single, they still belong to their parents, or mostly important, they belong to God. Recognize and think about who owns this girl. Who owns her? Letter B, he understood that the presence of God was everywhere. There's one thing that stands out in these accounts to me that is so, to me, I just love it. And that is, Dad wasn't there. Mom wasn't there. Alan wasn't there. Joseph and Daniel and his three friends stood alone. But they had God on their side. Our true character is revealed by what we do when we think nobody else will find out. Let us see, he knew when it was time to flee. He knew when to get out. And most of the times when we fall is because we have considered the temptation. We've considered it. We've toyed with it. And we've actually wanted it. And we want it. And we want it some more. And finally, by the time we cave in, we've just lusted after it. And we finally got what we wanted. Every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. He knew when it was time to flee. And we need to look at the verses in Matthew chapter 5. We won't turn there because you know them well. But it says, if thy right eye offend thee, cut it out. Take it out. If your hand offends you, cut it off. And that's simply saying that we need to learn to separate ourselves from the things in life that will take us down. And they may be important things sometimes. Too often, we have looked at people that say, I have to remove myself from this situation so that I don't fall. Too often, maybe we looked at it as a weakness, and we need to look at it the other way. That is a sign of strength and not weakness. Letter D. If we're going to be a people prepared in these times, we need to prepare our people and ourselves to face the struggles of pornography. And I guess I preached a message to Katauda on this, and so I'm just going to touch on it here. But I have a burden in my heart because there are too many people in our churches. When I'm saying our churches, I mean in our plain circles that have their head in the sand on this subject. And I try to preach a message on this subject nearly everywhere I go. And just everywhere I preach it, there is somebody crying and somebody in tears because of the pain of these sins. And we need to be a little bit more like our evangelical friends and open up and start talking about these subjects. They are real in our churches. There is hardly a church that is not affected by this sin. No, you don't like to hear that. But that is what I believe is the truth. And I went out and have meetings and preach on this. People open up and they talk. We need to be open about how easy it is to access this stuff. We need to be open about how easy it is to hide it. We need to be open about the dangers of it. We need to be open about what it will do to a person's mind and brain. And how addicting it is. And I just want to say that this afternoon, if there be somebody here caught in the clutches of that sin, I want you to know that there is help out there. I want you to know that you can find help from that sin. You can find freedom in Jesus Christ. You can find freedom. But you won't be able to do it alone. You will need someone to help you. And I'm burdened this subject because I see, and this isn't to young, this is to parents. I'm burdened because I see parents sometimes who, I don't know if they don't understand, I don't know if their head is in the sand, I don't know if they just don't want to. But, you know, seemingly have just loose internet controls, things are loose in the home. And you know, if we're going to have these kind of gadgets, like right here, if we're going to have laptops and all that kind of stuff, we need to know what we're dealing with. We need to know how to lock that thing down. And filter and accountability. I'm serious about that. You know, it may have worked for Dad and Grandpa to not talk to their boys. But it ain't going to work for us in this generation we're in. We have got to be open on this subject. And it was with grief that I have ran into it several times in my ministry. Once it was with parents and once it was with a boss, where they were teaching the boys and girls, I think in the one case, that masturbation is okay. And I'm here to tell you that is sin. That is wrong. If we're going to be a people prepared in these times, we have got to communicate on these subjects. Number three, we need personal conviction to have a heart with purpose. To be a people prepared in these times, we need to have a heart with purpose. And I look at all of these men. I look at Joseph, and he found purpose in life in the situation that he found himself in. Do you know there's a lot of acceptance and stuff that could have came, that probably came with where Joseph was? But he learned to accept his situation. Daniel learned to accept his situation. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did. They learned to have a purpose in life that had to be different from what they had hoped. I just want to say that young people here this afternoon, the Church of Jesus Christ needs you. It needs your support. It needs you to be one of those that jump in as a warrior for the cause of Jesus Christ. I'm going to read you an excerpt from Winston Churchill. When Great Britain had declared war on Germany, this is what he said. And maybe this seems a little strong, but I think we can make the parallel. He says, "I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. Even though all Europe might fall, we will not flag nor fail. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields. And in the streets, we shall fight in the hills, we shall never surrender." And it said when he made this speech that when he was all done, all the people cheered. I don't know about you, but my blood runs cold. Do you think of giving my life on the battlefields for the kingdom of this world? Brothers and sisters, we need people who say, "I am willing to give my life for the cause of Jesus Christ and His kingdom. And I am willing to pull my weight. I am willing to put my shoulder to the wheel for this church here in Pine Grove or in Katata or wherever you find yourself. I will put my shoulder to the wheel and I will fight unto the end." Number three, if we're going to be a people prepared in these times and people with conviction, we must be willing to stand with the minority. This will not make you a popular person. And maybe you don't have the struggles we do in the East. You probably don't or saved from some of that. You know, there's a lot of peer pressure sometimes in these situations. A lot of peer pressure. And young people find themselves, young couples, they get sucked in because they have this large group of friends. And you know, if you don't go with the flow, if you don't go with the friends, you're banded. I don't know how it is out here in the West. Maybe it's not quite like that. I hope it isn't. You know, there's a lot of situations where we must be willing to stand with the minority. The people that are willing to take the stand of Joseph and Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego and stand with the minority save themselves from a lot of grief and temptation. The young people that want to do what is right, but yet they are part of this clique group and this crowd. They face temptation after temptation. And then there's sometimes failure after failure because of that tremendous peer pressure that has them sucked in. Matthew 7:13-14. Enter ye into the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way that leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Young people, young couples, whatever you are here, don't be afraid to stand with the minority. It will save you a lot of grief. Number four. It's actually number five. Something wrong with my point system. We're going to be people prepared in these times. We need to understand our influence. But you know, each one of us has somebody that's looking up to us. I don't care what age you are. Daniel made the choice to initiate that change of food. And I guess as I read the story, it just seems to make sense to me that Daniel initiated it, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were the ones that then came along with him. Maybe you don't see it that way. It seems like it's the way it was. But you know, it's the way it is. One person stands up for what they know is right. And let me tell you, you probably will not be standing alone. There are other young people, there are other young couples that want to do what's right. I know it. I'm convinced of it. But you know, young boys back here, young girls, near this bench, right here, are looking up to you. Young married, there might be a couple young married here. I'm not sure. I don't know y'all well enough. That group of young people are looking up to you. And I want to give you an illustration. I was walking out in the parking lot at our church there at Winchester, just walking out to my van to get something or put something away, I'm not sure what. And there's this group of roughly 10-year-old boys standing around the new car that ended up in the parking lot. And as I was walking up, I heard this one young little boy say, "When I get big, I'm going to get a car just like this one." You know what? They want to be just like you. They look up to you. And the serious side of this is, you know, 5 years from now, there's a lot of changes that can happen in 5 years from now. Some of you young people here, in 5 years, you might be sitting back a couple more benches, and you may even have a child on your lap. Now, I know you think that ain't possible. Yes, it is. And you're going to look up ahead, and you're going to look up here at the youth that are the ones right here now. And you're going to look there and possibly be glad at what you see. Or you could look up and be grieved with what you see. And you will go home and cry because you know they have followed your steps. You know, I don't know you all enough to know how it is. That's real to some people. They look up at the young people and they know that they have followed their path and their choices. They know that their decisions paved the way. But you know what? If you lived a faithful life as a youth, you won't face that shame. You won't have to face that. Young couples. You know, I know what it's like as a young couple. You're getting married and you're out underneath dad and mom's wings. And I can remember that feeling of freedom. Do you know there's other young people looking on? They want to be like you. And if you decide that I'm tired of church standards, I'm tired of all this rigmarole, we're going to go have fun. Are you willing to be accountable for other people following your steps? What is a grief to me is it seems like in churches that this whole thing can run in cycles. And it seems like when you can have groups that leave. I don't even always know why sometimes. But we really do influence each other. We really do. And we can influence each other for the good. If we're going to be people prepared in these times, we need to be willing to teach others. And there's many scriptures. I'm going to read the one that Pete already read, but that's the one there, in meekness instructing those that oppose themselves. You know, I like to see people buckling in. And I don't know if you have summer Bible school here or what all you have going. Or any kind of... I love to see young ones up here happen to sweat something out, teaching something. And anyone goes to my church knows I feel that way. But it is good for you to lock in and have to teach others. It's good for you to have to go wherever it is and learn to sweat it out and teach. The only thing that teaching does helps you decide who you're going to be. I encourage you, if you have opportunity to somehow invest in someone else's life, that you take it. You will learn. You will learn more to yourself than sometimes than you're able to teach them. Well, in closing, let's turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. First Thessalonians 4, verse 15. This we say unto you by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not prevent them which are asleep. The Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. So shall we ever be with the Lord. Wherefore comfort one another with these words. Brothers and sisters, someday that day will be here. And may God give us the strength to be a people prepared for that time.